Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener, Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Wrestling, well, we like pro wrestling too. This week in the news, Vince McMahon and his lead foot, the lazy river of wrestling criticism, SummerSlam preview, and Invader Club, Dusty Rhodes and Ron Garvin versus Ric Flair and Arn Anderson. This was a bit of a hoot. I'm Jeff Hawkins, he's Chris Novembrino. Chris, I've gotten to that stage in my life now where you have to give me prep time mentally to do something, or I'm just not going to do it. I'll give you the example. About an hour ago, I was asked to do a post show for SummerSlam. I was like, if you had asked me Tuesday or Wednesday, sure. Friday, 4 p.m., having to plan for 4 hours of watching wrestling on both Saturday and Sunday and then talking about for 2 hours. I had already made plans, but I could have moved them. But I'm not going to now.
Right. I mean, like, there is our relationship with this show, especially as a show that does, you know, is basically a hobby for us. It's like times where this feels rather effortless because Joe and I would just with you and talk about it for an hour, and that's easy, and it's an you know, it was enthusiastic, we have a lot to talk about, let's go, I'm ready to such as the one we are about to discuss, where it feels decidedly and doggedly like work, where you know, allocating the time and everything feels sloggy. You know, and I'm not like in I'm not necessarily super jazzed to do it, or like as you were saying, it's like let's just over with. It won't hurt if we do it fast.
No, I'm also gonna be at my mom's house. I don't want to have to subject her to having to watch wrestling all day. If I were living alone, or if I were here alone, maybe, you know, if I'm on my couch with snacks, sure. But it's also the principle of the thing. It's like, look, give me some headway. I know I'm usually good for things, but it's like last second, I'm just like, yeah. Anyways, let's talk a little bit about Vince McMahon, because he's a jerk. Vince McMahon, who turns 80 next month, was in an auto accident on July 26th at 9 a.m. TMZ reported that Vince McMahon was driving a 2024 Bentley in Westport, Connecticut on Route 15, which rammed into the back of a 2023 BMW 430.
That poor vehicle.
Then hit a median wooden beam guardrail. This was not far from WWE headquarters. A third vehicle, believed, based on a report by Brandon Thurston, to have been driven by someone who worked in WWE but was not a public figure, ran into the debris. Airbags automatically released in McMahon's car and in the BMW. All three drivers were wearing seatbelts and none were significantly injured, but all three cars had to be towed from the scene. The victim posted on her Facebook, "Lucky to have survived a horrific car crash on the way up to catch the ferry to Martha's Vineyard last Thursday morning. Both cars total, Vince McMahon, former chair at WWE hit me going 80 to 90 miles per hour as I drove in the right lane of the narrow Merritt Highway. I and the dog are mostly fine, but was lucky to have kept control of the car more or less as I shot off the road after being catapulted over 100 yards. An unmarked state trooper had been following him as he sped in and out of cars down the highway and had just turned his lights on to pull McMahon over, but was not in time. Both front wheels of McMahon's Bentley were sheared off and his airbags deployed, probably saving him from significant injury. The trooper told me afterwards that McMahon saw me last minute and swerved, smashing into my left rear, but if he had hit me head on, there might have been a different ending for me. Amazing no other cars were hit, etc., etc. He was only cited for a misdemeanor, by the way. Scheduled to appear in Stamford Superior Court on August 26th. There have been many, this is Dave, there have been many stories over the years regarding McMahon's speeding and dangerous driving, although most dated back a few decades when he was younger. Jim Cornette wrote, the long list of people who would refuse to ride with Vince driving included me and Jim Ross, who told them, quote, I love my children and want to see them again. Yes, this has every DWI driving while important. Oh, look at me, I have a Bentley. I think he was still going to WWE headquarters to work out because he still has gym access there and had to feel the burn of his bodybuilding at 80. But it's 9 a.m. on a weekday and you're doing 90. What is your problem?
Well, the whole thing is disgusting, right? You said he's only getting charged with a misdemeanor.
Let's see. He was cited. McMahon was given a misdemeanor summons for reckless driving and following too closely, resulting in an accident.
That's disgusting.
That's BS. Throw the book at him.
Right. Well, there's that. And then do you know the level of work and craftsmanship that goes into making a Bentley, Jeff? These do not just come off of some factory line here. This is a quality, top of the line luxury vehicle to drive it. With such blatant disregard for quality and craftsmanship that goes into such a vehicle is sad to me. Heartrending. Oh,
are you mourning the BMW 430 that lost its life in
It's a factory vehicle. I'm talking about something that's made with true hand precision craftsmanship by the Bentley workshop.
You know, to have the arrogance of the 16-year-old whose father owns a dealership and you're just speeding around town like you own the place still at 80.
I guess he is yet another person where I feel like there are so many stories about this person from so many different chapters of their life, from so many different sources, that if you still somehow have a narrative in your head that he's like a halfway decent guy, I just don't know. I have no compunction to say anything to you because I don't know how you could possibly arrive at that rationally.
Chelsea Green got chased off of social media last week for saying something nice about Hulk Hogan. Oops. And here's my theory. We had a bit of a tete-a-tete last week, and I mostly agree with you, Chris, that, yay, you know what? If you don't want to mourn Hulk Hogan, you don't have to mourn Hulk Hogan. But if somebody else is mourning Hulk Hogan or is doing – somebody in the business is actually saying, hey, he was nice to me or something like that, it is not up to you to then tell him, yeah, but what about this? What is it about people on the internet that we do this to each other, Chris? Please explain this to me, because I'm just like, I understand that you feel like you have to give a correction to somebody.
Oh, all right. So I'm going to go. I don't disagree with you on your point here, but okay. I do want to offer a countervailing one, which is just because somebody was personally nice to you does not excuse all of their other outside behavior. You know, Jimmy Savile was nice to a lot of people on a personal level over there in England. I'm not going to come on this because, like, yeah, you know, like, let's say there's someone who's a known racist, like, I don't know, Hulk Hogan. Just because you had a nice interaction with them, you don't actually have to post that, knowing full well that you posting it might scan as a weird endorsement of said racist.
I found.
No, I don't think that people have to give the corrective, but I don't think people have to give the post either, Jeff. I really don't.
I really think
that the post is also in bad taste.
Paul Levesque was with Donald Trump on July 31st as part of the President's Council on Sports, Fitness, and Nutrition. He was there, as was Linda McMahon, when Trump signed an executive order to bring back the President's Council and to bring back the presidential fitness testing for students in public schools. Bane of my existence when I was in school.
I was like chuckling about all of this because I'm like, oh, great. We're bringing back a Bill Clinton program. Excellent. He was Mr. Fitness.
These fitness tests were established in the early 60s under President John F. Kennedy, but ended when Barack Obama was president. The idea was to address the decline in health and physical fitness among kids. Trump brought in Levesque, golfer Bryson DeChambeau, Kansas City Chiefs kicker Harrison Butker, and football legend Lawrence Taylor. All right.
Why? Of all of the football players, why the guy who is on the child sex offender registry list? Why that one? Why would you pick? There are lots. Jeffrey, lots of football players. I'm familiar with like literally about a dozen teams. So, and they presumably been playing for years. Why? Why Lawrence Taylor?
New York, 1985, probably, because that's where Trump lives in his head.
Sure.
Yeah. A lot of people giving Triple H crap for this because he was a bodybuilder, not really an athlete, but I'm just like, you know, I understand. Look, I never liked the presidential fitness test. Don't get me wrong, but I'm just like, it's not that horrible of a thing, is it?
I think it's sort of like either or, right? Like one, I don't really know what we glean from the presidential fitness test as someone who actually had to do it back in the day. There's the sit and reach. There's the shuttle run.
Shuttle run.
Mile
you had,
run.
You had
what were
that,
the other? Was the rope? Sit-ups.
And
was the rope?
No, you had pull-ups.
Pull-ups. That's right. Pull-ups. Right. Here's my thought. I don't, in a vacuum, right? Like, I don't hate the idea, but like one, if we're thinking about child development between 0 and 10, like you can't really put on that much muscle. So just because your 9-year-old can't do a pull-up doesn't mean they're going to grow up to be an obese piece of shit. Right. Like, you know, like, like, yeah, they might hit puberty in a few years. I mean, like, when did you have to do the presidential fitness test? Right.
Yes,
I had to do it in elementary.
You're doing it pre-puberty. No, I had to do it in middle school, and I think I had to do it in high school too.
No, yeah, but yeah, I was having to do it at Blueberry Hill Elementary School in like 3rd, 4th, 5th grade. Like we were doing it way pre-puberty. So I guess my thought was always like, it's kind of like a silly program based on childhood development. And then like it's on, you know, if you don't make gym a priority in schools, as in like, you know, making sure that our kids are also like learning stuff, but then getting physically fit as well. Then like, what is the presidential fitness test doing too? It's just like a way to get merit badges at school. Now on the WWE angle of this, right? I guess for me, I look at this and go like, how does this company just have a knack of hitching their wagon to like a figure that is in the press right now for problematic reasons at like the worst of all possible times? It's like MBS before and Saudi Arabia before, right? As they're, you know, killing journalists. And now Trump, right, as this Epstein story continues to spiral. I do not understand from a corporate standpoint why you would want to get political right now. I'm not making the go woke, go broke, or even the contrary argument. I'm just saying, looking at this from a boardroom standpoint, I don't really see a great value added for WWE hitching their wagon to a presidency that does not seem to be achieving mass popularity, nor on a pathway to doing so.
Drew McIntyre went to a wedding in the UK, and after the wedding, flying home, he presented his UK passport, and they wouldn't accept it, saying he was a US citizen. He posted a message where he blamed it on Jelly Roll, which was storyline, but the story about being not allowed to board the flight was legit. He said that he may have to miss SummerSlam, but obviously WWE lawyers were working on the case immediately, and he was back in the US on July 30th. He said, quote, "It's quite the week I've had. You want to know how it's been capped off? I can't get back in America. They wouldn't let me board my flight. I'm in England still. I'm at my buddy's wedding. What a wedding it was. Planning to go back, train for SummerSlam, but no. I got blocked. Wife and I walked up to the gate trying to check in. Always goes perfectly fine. Not this time. You don't have your U.S. passport. I know who you are. I know you've lived there for a long time. I know you're showing me pictures of U.S. passport and your global entry. It doesn't matter. I know exactly who you are. You're at home. We're good people. We care about our animals. We care about people. Go ahead, babe. Don't think about me. Leave me behind. Leave me to die behind. It's okay. She has to go against her will. Goes back home, look after the cat, and here I am."
I'm old enough to remember when this shit had something to do with preventing terrorism. How many wrestlers are we up to now that have been somehow log jammed on travel issues based off of things of this nature?
Well, I know Sheeta is still having her
three or four, right? Yeah. At least. Yeah. I this is a sign of the times story to me. Obviously WWE, given their relationship with the current government, will always be able to resolve these situations. But it's just like, this is so dumb. I at a certain point, you look at this, when the security guard goes, "I know exactly who you are." What are we doing here then? Do you think it's a man in a Drew McIntyre mask? Do you think that there's clone tech? Like, what is the security? You think Drew McIntyre is part of a new faction in WWE known as Al Qaeda? What is the twist you're looking for here?
I'm not even gonna justify the Al Qaeda comment.
You just did.
No.
You made it better.
The WWE late night event with Tony Hinchcliffe, scheduled for August 2nd after the first night of SummerSlam, was canceled with just 632 tickets out. This is a good thing. You don't want people with thin skins doing roasts. Trust me. WWE Speed has been quietly dropped. Darn.
It was quietly shown too. It was all quiet.
I get the thought of, 3-minute matches on Twitter, for social media stuff, but this is also Russo-esque thinking where it's like 3-minute matches end up hurting your product, because then it's like, why aren't you beating this guy in 60 seconds when you could beat him in this other guy who was really good in 3 minutes or whatever. I understood it. I just didn't like it. Yeah. The movie Coyote versus Acme with John Cena will get a theatrical release on August 26, 2026. It will have a big opening weekend, and then it will die because it's a one-joke premise.
I had the same thought. Like, this is a cartoon episode. This is not a movie, right? Yes. Like, this is a 12-minute short where you get all the best jokes crammed down to 12 minutes, and it's funny. It's a classic episode of Looney Tunes, but it is so not a movie.
In an interview with Q101, Tony Khan said there was something to the rumor of building a permanent television taping arena for AEW. I just don't see that happening. I can't. There's no location that's hot, that is that hot for wrestling, as we saw with the Chicago stay, that can sustain that for things that aren't main events and stuff like that. I am the foremost person. I wanted studio wrestling when the pandemic hit, but now they've kind of,
no,
can you
no,
see the way where this works?
I can't. No. Like it's you would have needed to have a very different strategy for at least the last 3 to 4 years.
Yes.
Where you're really forging meaningful and clear relationships with one city. I mean, the first thing that kind of comes to mind is like a semi-rhetorical question of like, is there really one city that AEW outperforms in meaningfully compared to other cities? I don't know that I see it. If anything, the best one I can come up with would be somewhere over in England, the United Kingdom. They might be able to draw a more reliable and hotter audience, you know, kind of like thinking back to the TNA running over in the UK back in the day sort of thing, where they would do that and those shows would be really hot.
Yeah, NXT gets theirs from basically free admission. And you know, that whole area down there being kind of tourist heavy at the same time.
You'd have to make it a small studio. And then like, what is that? I feel like as much as you and I love studio wrestling, I think we both appreciate the convention of the TV studio wrestling show as like a triumph of low budget TV. It's super entertaining, low budget, low visibility wrestling. Like that's you know, the old NWA Power stuff from about 10 years ago, and obviously all the classic stuff in the 80s. That to me is fun because it screams de classe. So if Tony puts AEW into this permanent TV studio, it's going to have to be small, and that's going to make you feel like the lesser guy, the little guy.
Yeah.
More
and
so.
I think it's also, you know, 3 years too late of building an actual place where you could have enhancement matches and stuff like that. It's just one of those things where it's like that ship has sailed. We need to think of a way to build up our young talent somehow. And
like you just said, would have to have had a different model, like kind of almost like the old style, like NWA, or I'm gonna get my promotions wrong here, but you pick a city like Atlanta, Georgia, or Raleigh, South Carolina, and that is your friggin' city. We run here all the time. This is the capital of our promotion.
Yes, we're part of the community. We're doing community outreach. We're doing all that.
We're in there. Yeah, no, like, and you know, if you lived in whatever city it is, you'd run into your MJFs in the Hertz. I mean, it would just be a regular feature of life that, you know, they'd be at baseball games. They'd be doing everything on TV all the time. Yeah.
Like Memphis used to be also.
Right. Memphis. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like Jerry Lawler's level of exposure in Memphis, that sort of thing. Like that's AEW never wanted to run like that. Right. They've always wanted to be a national semi-international promotion. They wanted to have this like world thing. Mm-hmm. And it's a different model. You know, I'm not even going to make a value judgment on it because I don't even think the value judgment's relevant. It's just a different model. And if you can't see the qualitative difference in that, that's your own thing.
I'll end with this. WWE Unreal released 5 episodes on Netflix this week. And I don't understand the level of almost Zapruder film going over things that some people in this space have been doing on it. And it's mostly like, it's a worked show.
Right. Like, yeah.
Or at least it's edited to build storylines that they want you to see, like most reality TV. But like Dave was like ranting about a pitch in a writer's meeting as if it was fact. And it's like, no, it was just a pitch. That's, as someone who's been in a writer's room before, you throw out a lot of bad ideas in a writer's room. If it's a welcoming environment, most of your ideas are gonna suck.
Dave, this is not Jane Goodall and the gorillas in the mist, right, buddy? This is a bunch of human beings who work for a professional wrestling company who understand a concept of kayfabe and understand that a bunch of cameras being on them is not being done to create an authentic document that documents the true inner workings of WWE.
Right. Yeah.
Like that's silly, man.
I think he is right that it's supposed to try and get Triple H to be the Dana White of WWE. Don't get me
right.
wrong.
But it's storytelling.
Yes, but here's the thing. If you want an actual documentary, you don't go, the company shouldn't be allowed to produce any part of this thing or have any control over what you see.
Knows what that looks like. It's Wrestling with Shadows.
Yeah, for the most part.
I know Wrestling with Shadows has its own problems, but there is we have documentaries that look like this. You know, it's not right. like we don't have to completely abstract this.
It was just like mind numbing because it was like, if you listen to, I sent you that episode of Wrestling Observer Radio where like Alvarez and Meltzer like arguing with each other about Tony Khan and also WWE. And it doesn't help the accusations that Dave may be a little bit protective of one and a little bit harsher on another of the two companies at times. It's interesting to see the process somehow, but don't view it as this is what the real process is. That's all I'm telling
people. Right. I don't view that as the real process any more than Willow Nightingale saying that the way, although that might be closer to reality.
Hey, what's up? I want a
match. Yo, Willow, what's going on? Yo, it's your boy TK. Like, I do kind of feel like
he's poochy. Tony Khan was poochy in that promo.
Yeah, and he probably likes that portrayal too.
Oh my goodness. Well, it's lazy river of wrestling criticism time. Whatever we watch, whatever we had time for. It's SummerSlam weekend. Two nights.
Oh yeah, we have to preview that. Oh my God. This was go home week.
This was go home week. And
this was go home week, Jeff. Yeah. This was horrible. This week was poopy poop.
Can I ask something? It was something I asked on Twitter and I debated with a few people about this. Is SummerSlam now the number five of the big five? Because Survivor Series has kind of rebranded itself as War Games. And War Games is always interesting to me, but I don't know if it's interesting to everybody else. Money in the Bank and Royal Rumble are definitely above SummerSlam in terms of interest because of the stakes involved. And, of course, WrestleMania is WrestleMania. So is SummerSlam now number five of five?
It definitely seems like under the new regime, SummerSlam is less of a priority item than it was for Vince, especially during the peak, right? You know, back in the day, SummerSlam, he did try to have something big to deliver come SummerSlam.
Oh, it was the end of the summer WrestleMania for like the late 80s and early 90s. Yeah.
And it used to, I mean, even back like 10 years ago, it's like, you know, we would talk about SummerSlam as kind of the start of lazy season, like the unofficial beginning of lazy season. Yeah. And I don't necessarily think that lazy season's at the same time. If anything, it kind of now feels like we do summer vacation here at WWE, where we take this quarter of the year kind of off. And then we get stronger as we get closer to Rumble. And, you know, we do the Money in the Bank and all the other things that kind of like ramp things up for Mania. I think you're not wrong. SummerSlam might be the least important of the important pay-per-views now. By virtue of this calendar,
the most prevalent argument for SummerSlam being important is they've expanded it to two nights now, and I'm not there, man. It's a decent card, but it's not.
I guess that begs the question: revenue importance, or I guess you know brings up the point: revenue importance not the same as narrative importance,
right?
You know, none of these matches represent the end of a big storyline.
You're exactly right. They're the beginning of most of them, to be honest with you. Look at these. Okay, so let's get into it. Tiffany Stratton versus Jade Cargill for the WWE Women's Championship.
I think Tiff loses here.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Jade's getting belted.
Yeah.
In the celebrity wing of wrestling, Randy Orton and Jelly Roll versus Drew McIntyre and Logan Paul.
I think Randy and Jelly Roll win this feel good thingy.
I think they lose. I think Jelly Roll takes the loss here because he's been getting like choke slams on Jimmy Kimmel or on the Jimmy Kimmel show when he was guest hosting. He choke slammed Logan Paul on there. Logan and Drew's been showing a lot of ass. And I just think, I think this ends with like Jelly Roll getting pinned and then Randy Orton RKOing Jelly Roll. And then it's a moment for Jelly Roll for some reason.
Maybe they pin Randy and then Jelly Roll gets to make the big heroic save. Logan Paul pins Randy to set up some sort of feud. I don't know.
Could be. The Judgment Day of Raquel Rodriguez and Roxanne Perez, your women's tag team champions, defending against the makeshift team of Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss.
I think the Judgment Day retain here.
I think they have to retain because they have to go on succeeding because the whole story is they're doing fine without Liv Morgan. Now, I don't know. People have been teasing that Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss are going to feud, and I don't think it's time yet, necessarily. I think, for some reason, starting Monday, I think we're going to be building to War Games in the fall, and for some reason, I see Charlotte Flair, Alexa Bliss, Bayley, and Becky Lynch all kind of aligned with each other, with possibly Naomi as the fifth. That's what it feels like, but I don't know that for a fact, but I also would not be shocked if Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss just have their feud or whatever, because nothing else to do with them. Roman Reigns and Jey Uso versus Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed. Bronson Reed stole Roman Reigns' shoes.
This is tough, because I'm gonna go heels win. I'm gonna go with Bron wins this.
Really?
Yeah.
I think Bronson Reed's here to eat this pin and Bron gets protected.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other way I could go is that Bronson Reed eats the pin here. But, like, I don't know. Jey Uso's definitely a guy who can eat a pin and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Both teams have that guy that you could absolutely have eat the pin. And that one might be the toughest one on the whole card.
Star and red shirt. That's
yeah. Right.
in the terms of Star Trek universe stuff.
Yep.
Sami Zayn versus Karrion Kross. If Kross wins, Zayn has to say the words Kross was right. If Zayn wins, Kross must say I was wrong about Zayn. This is straight out of Tennessee in 1992. Coward waves the flag type match stuff. But who has to tell the other something?
The only thing that's interesting here is the narrative, right? So it's gotta be Sammy loses and he has to say Cross is right and go on a Dark Night of the Soul journey.
Yeah. Yeah. Or Sammy wins by cheating and says Cross was right. I could see that happening too.
But that would be really, yeah. Like Cross has to say he was wrong, but he's not wrong. And like,
right.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like, wait a second, I got cheated and I was wrong. Oh, this sucks.
I mean, that might, you know, like Cross might win in that same way where Sammy has to say you were right. And it, you know, it's, but like, it's complete and total crap and Zayn knows it too. And they don't even do the Dark Night of the Soul thing.
And in a match that they talk me into the building, which I love about CM Punk, and he is the best at this.
Gunther's pretty darn good at it, too.
And Gunther's great at it, too, but Gunther versus CM Punk, yes. That promo in the show was awesome, again. And this is what this is why they pay CM Punk the big bucks.
This has been the highlight of this entire card. Like the last week's promo was great, this week's was great. Like, if the rest of the card was being done at this level, it would be such a better show.
Yes, I agree. Who wins?
I'm going to say Gunther wins cheating.
I think we're getting CM Punk winning and Seth Rollins cashes in.
Okay.
To screw him. Much like CM Punk screwed Drew McIntyre, Seth Rollins is going to screw CM Punk. And I think Seth Rollins is probably your world heavyweight champion.
I think that's right, but I think you're right. I forgot about the cash and potential. I guess Rollins is, do we know Rollins is healthy?
We don't know that he's healthy. Okay. We do know that he had a knee injury, but it wasn't as serious as originally thought, perhaps.
Okay. So he
But we don't know nothing, and they've kept this actually fairly well. I mean, he's been walking with a brace and other things.
So. Yeah, it's going to be real interesting. I mean, if it is a work, it's like, wow. LA, I'm fascinated to understand LA Knight's perspective from all of that. Seems like I kind of got screwed over here, boys. I think we've been slowly kind of building to a Gunther turn. Like, I see Gunther. And he's rubbed Rollins the wrong way, and Rollins rubs him the wrong way. So I could see him winning, and then Rollins comes out and takes the title away from Gunther.
He's the honorable heel, is what it is. It's like, hey, I view this as sacred, and I'm a jerk.
Right.
But I'm an honorable jerk. You are.
I want to beat the best in the world, and I did. And then you came out as a vulture after I beat the best in the world.
Right.
Yeah.
But I still think they see more in Punk versus Rollins first, so we're gonna hold off that turn just a little bit there. We go to night two, and in what should be a banger of a match, and I would expect at least two members of this match to probably be out for a long time afterwards. A 6-pack TLC match for the WWE Tag Team Championship. Featuring the Wyatt Six of Dexter Lumis and Joe Gacy versus Andrade and Rey Fénix versus DIY, Gargano and Ciampa versus Axiom and Nathan Frazier versus the Motor City Machine Guns, Shelley and Sabin versus the Street Profits, who tower over most of these people, Angelo Dawkins and Montez Ford. Post-WrestleMania, that match was a fantastic. We're just going to add a couple more teams in here as well. Boy, Rey Fénix being injury prone, I don't like his chances after this match, but we'll see who. It doesn't matter really who wins this match because these titles get tossed around like hot potatoes, but who are your tag team champions on the SmackDown brand at the end of this match, Chris?
DIY? Knowing that
you don't watch SmackDown all
the time. Yeah, DIY.
I'm going to go with Andrade and Fénix.
Okay.
I think there's something there. I think there's some matches in there that would be very, very interesting.
Yeah, you're right. But
I'm a big Andrade fan.
I got him being injured at the end of the match.
Yeah, I kind of think that too.
So the DIY is the backup plan, and they're gonna win.
Lumis and Gacy. I'm just hoping they're there to base people. They've looked terrible in the past few weeks.
The Wyatt Six is an act that I kind of forget exists because it's so pointless. I think they forget why they exist.
In what's been an entertaining program, in a singles match for the WWE Intercontinental Championship, Dominic Mysterio versus AJ Styles.
I think Dominic retains here.
I think Dominic retains as well. I just...
Yeah.
AJ Styles...
There's a lot of Coyote Roadrunner stuff going on here.
Very much so, but AJ Styles always being around with Dominic. It's faking his illness. Look, AJ Styles is not what I'd call a great sketch comedian, but he's great at being AJ Styles.
In this role, he has been written very well to basically have had the upper hand on him this entire time, which, like, you know, he never had the big beatdown segment of Dom, but like all he's done throughout all of this is torment him. So he didn't need to win here. He, you know, Dominic just needs to cheat to win, which is what he's going to do.
In a steel cage match for the United States Championship, Solo Sikoa, your champion, versus Jacob Fatu. I think Sikoa and his crew screw Fatu somehow, but I think Fatu is doing a moonsault off the top of that cage.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. I think like this is not the end of the Solo Sikoa Fatu thing because they don't really know what they're doing with all of them after that. So
yeah. Tonga and Jeff Cobb will probably be involved somehow.
This must go on. Yeah, Shota Tonga and Tala Tonga.
No disqualification, no count out, last chance match for the WWE Women's Intercontinental Championship. Becky Lynch, your champion, defending Lyra Valkyria and her Becky Stompers.
Oh, I'm those the moon shoes. I think it's incredible that she was able to get a pair of those on loan from Nickelodeon.
Or from Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins, to be honest with you. I just can't help the feeling, number one, that this whole program has been to get Lyra over. And I, but.
Right down to the shoes.
I also know, I get the feeling Bailey is somehow involved in this. I don't know how, because it's no DQ, no count out. I don't know if Becky retains, but I don't think Lyra wins clean either. That's the weird thing to me, even though she should, to get herself over. I just feel like Bailey's going to be a part of this story afterwards.
Yeah, I agree. I think Becky retains. I think Lyra is being positioned to chase, and I guess now in this story, she's the good guy. So... yeah, I think
her promos aren't helping, but yeah, she's
nothing about this story is helping anything. I feel like they've got talent on loan from the other company writing this story, because that's how much sense it makes.
It is a mess. Actually, I'm gonna go with Lyra winning this, but with Bailey's help. I think that's where we get, and then she eventually rejects Bailey, and Bailey ends up teaming with Becky against her somehow. That's just the only thing that makes sense to me,
it makes the most sense.
Booking Bailey for big shows? That's my question. Wasn't in Mania, wasn't in SummerSlam. It's unreal to me. She's the best bell-to-bell wrestler on that roster in terms of the women's division. But hey, this one's going to be a banger. Naomi versus Rhea Ripley versus Io Sky in a triple threat match for the women's world title. I think the ending is fairly obvious, but I want to see what you think, Chris.
I think Naomi pins Io Sky.
That's exactly it. Yeah. And I think Rhea Ripley like gets the dominator on Io and then Naomi throws out Rhea, pins Io Sky. Yeah. So that we don't pin Rhea. Naomi is having a hell of a run in this character.
Yeah, no. This character's hot. Like, I mean, she's got once again, she has found a tweak to her characterization again in mid to late, now like late phase of her career, where it's gotten her super white hot again.
Yes.
Let's not forget there's a former Funkadactyl. how far we have come since you and I first got on the air.
And in a street fight for the undisputed WWE Championship, John Cena versus Cody Rhodes.
It's a street fight. I think it's going to be like absolutely overbooked to Kingdom Come.
Yes.
I think Cena retains here because he debuts.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think he debuts help or something. You know what I mean? I think we get into the next phase of the Cena story, the mid-late phase.
I think we get Dwayne. I think Dwayne screws Cena somehow. Now, I don't know if that means Cody's going to be his new champion. But I think we have to start the babyface turn in at SummerSlam.
Well, okay, so there's another way to do that. You have Dwayne come down, decide that John's not getting the job done. He hits the rock bottom on Cody and then tells Cena to pin him and basically creates this subservience dynamic between him and John Cena. That's another way to get there.
Yeah, I think Cody Rhodes, though, is your undisputed WWE champion at the end of the night. I don't think it's Cena. I think it's time to pull the plug on this.
I agree on that. This has all of the dynamism of the Jon Moxley championship run, which is to say none.
All right. Do you want to do Dynamite or do you want to do NXT?
I will do NXT real quickly because I have exactly one comment on this stinky, stinky, horrible show that made it very hard for me to watch everything else. This week on NXT, we went back to a trope that needs to die a brutal, terrible death. In wrestling, we need to get rid of it. It needs to be forbidden. It needs to result in cancellation with exile to northern parts of Svalbard with no blankets. And the segment is when the champion, it's cold up in Svalbard, Jeff. It's not nice. It's not a temperate climate for a guy who likes shorts. not up in Svalbard. No, it is not. Let me tell you, we'll talk about this off air. The segment that needs to die is the champion comes out. Let's assume they're a heel. They come out, they have their belt, they are talking, and they're going to start doing a promo. But we know that this promo is not actually going to be a real promo. But we still have to go through the fakeness of this for about 90 seconds. Is there blah, 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 blah. And that's why, and then all of a sudden music hits. And out comes babyface schmuck number one. And she starts talking on the microphone, and she talks about how she has done a thing or something or other. And she's very proud of the thing that she's done. But before she can get into how proud she is about that thing, out comes baby face schmuck number two, Putzo Magoo. And she's out there, and now she's talking about things that she has done, because she too as well has also done things. But before she can truly articulate the nature and the depth and the passion with which that she did those things, the things that she has done, out comes number three, babyface Putzo. And now all three of them are standing in the ring, and they are arguing and interrupting each other like little petulant children. These are, of course, all three people I'm supposed to take credibly as potential challengers to the title, but none of them can sit and listen to a complete sentence while the other one's talking. They all have to talk over one another. And then finally, the champion scolds all three of the challengers as though they are petulant children and is like, enough, you petulant little girls. Stop talking over one another. I am the champion. I am doing things. And they're like, we all want title shots. And then the fighting breaks out. This is one of the worst segments in professional wrestling, because it makes all of the baby faces look like children. It makes the heel look like the adult in the room. And then it ends with everybody beating each other up.
Yes. I hate it.
This week's victims of this segment were like Jordan Grace and Lola Vice and JC Jane, but I have seen this tragedy happen on my TV screen too many times. AEW does it as well, but this week, I don't know what it was. Something snapped in my brain as Lola Vice was out there talking about this prestige moment, dancing with Nikki Bella. Who cares? Who cares? And then before I can even decide if I give a shit, she's interrupted by someone else's music.
And it's always Jada Parker.
Yes.
I felt the same way about the Hangman Page MJF segment on Dynamite, where it's just like, I need Hangman to establish dominance as the champion and to be the alpha in this company. And instead it's, I'm here, Renee gets two words out, and here comes, hey, Seabiscuit. It's like, oh, God.
No, I'm with you, dude. Shove MJF into an effing locker and kick him in the gut and go, were you saying something? You can execute your contract. You cannot, like, let me make this clear, Max. You can execute your contract. You cannot execute your contract. That's how you're getting a title shot.
I'm the champion. This is my time.
Yeah.
This is my time. I'm the champion. Right. Get out of my, I paid for this time. I love that trope. I always love the trope of I've paid for this time on this TV show to say these things.
Right. No, because it makes the time feel valuable. It makes it feel like you're interrupting something and put stakes on the thing. All these things matter.
My only NXT note was I did not mind at all the Tony D write-off. I thought, you know what? If you're going to steal from the best. The Soprano ending, I'm good with it. Mm-hmm. I am. If we can find a way to repackage Tony on the main roster and he's going up there or something, great.
I'm with you. I feel like we hit the end of the line with the D'Angelo Gabagool Mafia story. And yes. Like it got to a point of diminishing returns for everyone. I mean, I do like them pulling the plug on it. And yeah. I actually think that this is not a bad way to pull the plug on all of it.
Yeah, that same here. I was like, okay, cool. They did the Sopranos thing. Great. Good for them.
And I kind of like how Luca and Stax are now both scarred by the breakup of the family, but in different ways. Like, right. I don't mind that. I like how they both have this families don't last thing, but they take it from a different angle. And, you know, like I think Stacks is like, families don't last and they shouldn't. You should be the one who stabs them first. And Luca is like, families don't last. I don't know who I trust anymore.
So we'll go to Dynamite real quick.
Hey, I said something nice about the show. Look at me.
You did. Narrative satisfaction of the Bucks angle is that they lose until they snap. And they continue to be poor, and we continue to pursue that.
And, like, they get embarrassed on a constant basis, and each week is a deeper and deeper humiliation for, like, 4 weeks.
Yes, but no, we run into Tony wants his bangers. And so we get the Young Bucks winning clean over the Outrunners and not being on a losing streak. Okay, but we're still going to do the poor stuff for the backstage skits with, like, Stokely and whatnot. I mean, they won. They didn't even cheat to win, really. They did the ball shot earlier, but they pinned the Outrunners clean with the TK driver. I watched this. I went, well, what was the whole point then of setting up this story where they're destitute and we're not even going to follow through with it because we want to see them have a good match with Brodito or whatever the heck that the Bandito Brody King team. Yeah, it's going to be a banger. Cool. But like, now you have to,
This is another universe right now that I have just completely mentally tapped out on, because All In is, my understanding, like, supposed to be their big WrestleMania event, right? Like, it should be the end of these storylines. And now we are into year two of the Bloodline with storylines that were as stale as the Bloodline was year two. The Death Riders should be done.
Yes, go ahead.
The idea that the Death Riders are still, like, an operant and dominant faction is ridiculous. This MJF Hurt Business thing, it, like, goes on a week too long, and the melodrama is dumb.
I don't want to leave the Death Riders, though, because that still ticks me off, because nobody's allowed at ringside.
Yeah.
There's Marina Shafir. Okay.
Two problems with this. One, Hangman calls the stipulation his champion. It's not getting honored. Two, and even more importantly here, the whole point of the other stuff that wasn't around Hangman at All In was that we were establishing or reestablishing law and order in the AEW universe, that, like, the forces of light were once again in control of this show. And an easy way to do that, like, the easiest way in the world is, oh, wow, Tony Khan sending out the security guards to take Marina Shafir away. Like, you don't even have to have Tony Khan come on screen, although he might want to. You literally just have security guards come and keep the Death Riders out and make it clear that there's a new regime out here. For even if it's just a point narratively, like, it's, I continue to be left cold by a star rating system that fails to account for the intensity of an angle. And so I think when we look back on this time, we're looking at, like, star ratings for all these matches over the last 10 years. It's just going to be really important to remember that it had nothing to do with how intense, like, the actual overall angle is. It's just literally a consideration of the quality of suplexes.
I did like the Moxley Hangman match here more than I did at All In. I thought the All In match was a little bit too excessiveness in terms of forks, beds of nails, barbed wire, whatever other things. I mean, this was good.
I guess I just would have assumed, I mean, going back to story stuff, right?
Yes.
Hangman backs Moxley into this corner of this stip match that favors him. Moxley should have some sort of novel strategy that Hangman didn't anticipate, and Hangman still overcomes it.
And my only other note I had is I have a very different point of view on that Christian promo, because certain facets of the commentator saying it was a horrible night for Christian, blah 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 blah, and that Christian was getting lost in his promo, and that's why he was referring to the crowd and whatnot.
That only happened, I think, a couple of times. I don't think he was actually. And one time he was just tripping over the start of his sentence, and he just used the crowd as a quick rejig. I thought that was actually clever.
I think this was all done on purpose to not turn him babyface, which is ridiculous to me in this story.
Agreed.
Because I think he was. I think these were all plot points he was doing in his mind to make sure that the crowd wouldn't cheer him after the promo. Like the unnecessary crowd work as I'm speaking my business or whatever he was. I'm conducting my business here. Heel move.
Yeah.
I don't think he was lost. I think this is, they're going to try and play that Sting Lex Luger babyface heel friendship, but they're still a team type of a thing. The problem is Uncaged, or whatever we're going to call Kip Sabian and Wayne, Nick Wayne, they have a point in that Christian's an asshole, so they should want to kick his ass. And
he's exhibited absolutely none redeeming qualities.
Exactly. It's a bad story to tell.
No,
really,
it's a bad story, too, because also Kip Sabian and Nick Wayne at no point during the patriarchy formed any sort of coherent bond that would suggest that these two would end up in alignment. If anything, it looked like Kip Sabian was being groomed to be the good, better son over Nick Wayne when Nick Wayne failed in Christian's eyes.
Right, and it's too clever. To me, I think they're doing a slow turn.
It's
here.
Not clever to me,
and it's not clever because it's like, oh, because commentary goes, oh, that heinous concerto. I was like, it's like, no, Christian's an asshole. He kind of deserved to get concerto. To be honest with you, I don't feel any sympathy when his charges beat the snot out of him. And it's one of these things where
it's just a let them fight thing, right? Yes. It's not
Copeland, your find yourself had no effect on me whatsoever. I'm still a jerk. It's like, okay, we're going to play that for a couple of weeks until he finally does have some regret, I guess. I just thought he should come out and come and, yeah, I'm a jerk and I've done bad things, but I'm starting to reconsider. So he should have had like a moment of doubt in there. That's my problem with this promo, is there was no moment of at least thinking about being contrite in his actions, right? I mean, that Adam Copeland's words had any effect on him whatsoever. And the turn had no effect on him whatsoever.
And he doesn't even have to be contrite. What he needs to do,
Just think about it. That's all he needs.
Like the neutral move. Recognize that he's isolated.
Yes.
And sort of seem unsettled and unresolved on how he feels about that level of isolation.
Just start like this. Tony Schiavone, I'm a man without a country right now.
Yeah.
You know, and just say, hey.
And actually, you can even have the promo end with Tony going, and how do you feel about that? And Christian just looks at him and he walks out of the ring.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm watching this and I'm going, it's not a bad promo. I just think it's not the promo that's needed right here, because you're not telling the crowd to get behind Christian at any point. You're actually fighting against what the crowd wants. And it just felt off to me.
Well, no, it feels off because it's just another one of these stories where they've written themselves into a corner where however they're going to get out of that corner, something's just, you're going to have to like not focus or pay attention to that story beat.
Right. Because
if you do, it's just going to make your head hurt.
Yes. If you try and look for logic, you're going to be in trouble. Yeah. I have no other notes. Do you have anything?
I don't. I feel like we kind of got into the broad themes of all three of these shows. This was, for me, a disappointing week because I watch weekly television for world building to set up the quality wrestling on the big shows. You know, the big shows deliver big when the weekly television is big. And, like, it stinks. Summer Slams, Go Home Raw was uninspired, as was NXT. It stinks, you know, and it stinks that coming out of All In, the narrative reset of AEW just doesn't seem to be there. Like, it feels, you know, Willow Nightingale is joking when she goes, oh, I just go into Tony Khan. I'm like, yo, I want a match. And he's like, you want a match? And I'm like, yeah, I want a match. And like, now we're going to have a match. But like, it stinks that that feels closer to reality, like, you know, than you'd think. That like maybe two wrestlers go in there and go like, yo, can we have a match this week, Tony? And Tony goes, I actually don't have anything for Segate. You're on.
So it was my week for Vader Club. And after you brought in Steve Blackman, I'm like, well, who is the corollary from my fandom who would be Steve Blackman? And I immediately went to Ron Garvin. Not the most charismatic fellow in the world, but had a certain toughness to him. And I was originally going to do a Ron Garvin enhancement match where he's just bullying a dude and putting a sugar hold on some fat Southern guy and, you know, really amusing the fans. But I felt like it'd be too mean, oddly enough. I didn't feel like being in that negative headspace of being mean. So I came upon this worldwide TV main event of Dusty Rhodes and Ron Garvin versus Ric Flair and Arn Anderson. And I am so glad I picked this. I'm not saying this is a great match, but this addresses certain things in my fandom that I both love and miss. Number one, this crowd is amazing. This crowd is screaming at the top of their lungs. When the baby faces win, it's like they won a Super Bowl or something because you never pinned the world champion, as opposed to like every program now involves somebody pinning the world champion to set up the pay-per-view. We get our world champions get pinned once a month to set up pay-per-views. It addresses the stupid babyface syndrome. Arn Anderson's cheating. He gets pulled out by the ref. Ron Garvin sees an opportunity, punches Ric Flair. Dusty gets the pin. Babyfaces win. They overcome the odds and win. And this crowd who has been watching the horsemen get one up on their babyfaces over and over and over and finally get that emotional release out of it. Ron Garvin and Ric Flair are smacking the crap out of each other too.
That exchange is real stiff.
I mean, you can see like the welts on both guys' chests, and they're Arn is so great at this crowd wants to see me get my ass beat, and I want no part of it. Look, like just the pauses. That Arn Anderson, I mean, look, this is hillbilly community theater in so many ways. And I thought the part you'd turn on is like Flair doing the Flair flop that early, but I thought it fit kind of right there. Like you get it out of the way early, the crowd cheers because you know Ric Flair's kind of in trouble. But just after that, the initial stuff of Garvin and Flair, and Arn coming in there and just taking his time and going, what the hell have I gotten myself into? Dusty's pure mid to late 80s Dusty here. I mean, he is. We're having this discussion on the Voices of Wrestling Discord on the old school channel. It's like, well, in terms of matches you want to see, who would you want to watch out of the Rhodes family? And, you know, everybody's picking like Cody and Dustin because of work rate. I'm like, you give me Dusty Rhodes in 85 or 86 with a crowd like this, I will watch him over any well-worked match any day of the week when he's just, you know, threatening the elbow and stuff like that. You know, I loved this match, Chris. I know it's part of my youth and my fandom. Am I saying it's one of the best matches I've ever seen? No, but just the joy that brought me listening to that crowd be that hot for a pinfall instead of, yay, both these guys, this is wrestling. It's why I can't go to live wrestling anymore. These crowds ruined my fandom of sitting in like a cold auditorium chanting with other people instead of yelling for somebody to win and to kick somebody else's ass. Your thoughts.
I think the joy of wrestling is immersion, right? And whenever yes. I watch this old Southern stuff, even if like these guys weren't my guys growing up, but obviously I've watched all this stuff enough, I always think the fun part is there's not a lick of irony. Like no. Ronnie Garvin and Dusty Rhodes are 100% committed to the act. And like, that is so refreshing and antithetical to the current time that we are in, where it feels like everybody does everything with like a sense of meta-ness. Like Ronnie Garvin is just working as Ronnie Garvin. He's not like self-aware that he's Ronnie Garvin. Dusty is not self-aware. Rick is not self-aware. They are these people, the characters themselves are not like, you know, slightly aware of themselves. Ronnie Garvin's offense. He's really fun. Like, and when he's in good shape, his working punches and boots, some of which are just like really stiff. I just like the way his body, his locomotion is when he's doing offense. It looks convincing. It doesn't look like noodle punches or something like that.
Well, when he goes from like the chops to then, okay, the guy's on the, like Flair's on the ground after a chop and he's setting up for that punch, you know, he's kind of doing the boxer, you know, leg work or footwork kind of a thing. It looks legit. It looks like, yeah, this guy knows how to throw a real punch that could knock you out possibly.
Right. Right. And then I like the synergy. I like the synergy between Dusty and, Ronnie. I think that was cool.
I love that Dusty comes in for the hot tag. He hits Arn. He hits Flair. He runs to his corner, kind of high fives Ronnie, and then kisses baby doll. Just the simplicity of, all right, I got all my stuff in right there on the hot tag. And the crowd ate it up. Like, this was in his Risky Business Boys thing, so he's coming out to old-time rock and roll. And, you know, Dusty had his flair for the dramatic, don't get me wrong, but it was just, like, this was, hey, I get these two in the ring for a tag team match. The figure four was, I mean, Dusty's figure four was never anything impressive, but it was always kind of interesting to watch him put the figure four on somebody.
Right. And then like him against Flair, it's like, it's weird because like Flair's figure four is so much better than Dusty's. Like normally when the good guy and the bad guy have a signature move, it's like the bad guy's version is a lesser version of the good guy's version. And in the Dusty and Rick relationship, it's the exact opposite.
Yes. It's like, I need a figure four a fat man can put on somebody, please. But yeah, and look, and Flair's Flair. I mean, Flair, this is to me peak Flair in terms of this time frame. Maybe a little bit before peak Flair. I think this is 86, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Like 87, 88 is when he is just cock of the walk and nobody can touch him. But like, Arn is only like, God, Arn's only been in the business
31 at this point.
Five years or something at this point. He just looks like a...
Actually, no. Runner. Like, he got injured in the 90s. He was, like, 34, right? So yeah, he must be, like, 27 here.
Yeah, he just looks 40. But, I mean, he the way he holds the crowd in terms of just look.
Yes.
It's so amazing to watch. And he's always had that. It's the weird connection as a heel that he knows he's in trouble, but he also has kind of that respect of the audience that everybody knows that this guy looks like he could handle himself in a fight type thing. And he's always had that with the crowd. It's one that, like, when you watch later Arn Anderson, I mean, he never even has to try to have it. But this is young, you know, young pup Arn Anderson a little bit here, and so it's like it's fun to watch him figure it all out as he's doing it. But I put that on the Shake Them Ropes feed and also in our channel on the Voices of Wrestling Discord. Let's end it there, shall we? Or do you have anything else to say about this?
No, okay. That is it.
You can follow me on X at CrapGame13. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. You can get us on the Super Feed or on our own feed for Shake Them Ropes. I also do a show for Fight Game Media called The Dynamite Show about 20 minutes after they go off the air. Usually it's about 10 because of the overrun now, but at about 7:20 Pacific, we go live on YouTube, thoroughly deconstructing that week's Dynamite, myself and Paul Ace Fontaine, a figure four. And it drops in your podcatchers for free the next morning if you choose to listen to the audio version. Chris is on the Instagram at DOCTOR_NOV. He has plugs and whatnot to give to you.
Yeah, go and subscribe to my band on Spotify, Elevated Roots. I mean, this is the band I'm playing bass for. It's not really my band. But I will be making my debut on their Spotify here, probably around the same time as my actual single comes out, with a song that we were just in the studio tracking today called Threshold. Pretty proud of the bass line, though I didn't get to play it on my own bass, nor did I get to do it on my own amp. At least the line's still mine, unless that gets edited, and then it's truly a Darth Vader performance, where it's much more machine than man at this point. But I still appear on that recording. My album itself will be out. It's called Inversions. Still waiting on mixes and stuff, but basically just now here kind of waiting to hear back on things. I think everything will be just groovy. Go and subscribe to that on Spotify as well. Chris Delvambrino is my name-o. And if you want music lessons, you want to learn how to go out there and do it like the other people who go out there and do it. Yeah, could be you, bud. Lessons, get them from me.
See you next week. Enjoy SummerSlam.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.